So before we get started with our last presentation, which is essentially what on earth you can do about this, I wonder if Linnea Capps could pass around the sign-up sheet. I believe you have it. Is it being circulated? So the idea is that the Socialist Caucus of APHA, SCAFA, has presented this at other sessions, and if you're interested in being on our list or working with us to do sessions in future APHAs, we guarantee that you will get no more than 2 emails from us a year. Finally, in the realm of what you can do about it, I'd like to introduce the wonderful Katie Robbins, who is the executive director of the New York Metro chapter of Physicians for National Health Program, and former national organizer of Healthcare Now, still actively involved in that organization as well. And there she is.
Thanks, Martha.
What can we do, Katie?
So I remember when I was hired to work with Healthcare Now, and I thought I was organizing for socialized medicine, actually, and I was disappointed to learn that single-payer healthcare is really not socialized medicine. Obviously, it's socialized financing of the healthcare system, but we maintain private delivery. And I think that all of the folks at this panel and many people in the room would like to be fighting for the whole pie, but there's been some calculations that in the face of the kind of climate that we organize in and the political dynamics in this country that maybe pointing to the Canadian model as opposed to the Cuban model would be a little more politically strategic. So we've been organizing for single-payer healthcare at many different levels for years. PNHP, the New York Metro chapter, has been very engaged in national legislation for single-payer, the H.R. 676 bill, Medicare for All, and also the New York Health Act, which is the state-level single-payer bill in New York State. And I'm pleased to report that despite the odds we're up against that our speakers laid out, we had a small but really important success on the state level. Our bill actually passed the New York State Assembly earlier this year, and with 92 to 57 the votes, so nearly 2-to-1 support in the Democratic Assembly. And we were thrilled with that. It was the product of a lot of organizing work that had been done statewide. We actually started with a series of hearings that were sponsored by the Assembly Health Committee, and they were held throughout the state, upstate, Long Island, New York City, and hundreds of people came out to participate in these hearings because, as we know, the healthcare crisis continues. And I would argue that there are a few areas that we could really focus on in terms of highlighting the way this market-based healthcare system impacts people. The points that people really respond to is that, obviously, we have a huge uninsured population still. In New York State, the projections from the Urban Institute is that about 1.7 million people will remain uninsured even after the Affordable Care Act is fully implemented. Nationally, it looks like about, I think I've seen between estimates between 26 and 30 million remain uninsured. This is a huge population of people that are still left out of the healthcare system. Then there's the underinsurance problem. So I would put myself in that category. I have a healthcare plan that has a huge deductible, and we, in my family, and I'm sure many people here, know the feeling of what it's like to not get healthcare because you're worried about what you're going to have to pay. So we argue that that's a violation of our rights, and that we need to move to a system that ends that. So uninsurance, underinsurance, the problem of having cost barriers to care remain a problem. And we know that healthcare costs still drive medical-related bankruptcies. So those huge fundamental issues aren't going away. Now, in terms of the action that we've been involved in on the state level, you know, we've seen states pass single-payer legislation. Like in California, they passed the bill twice through their state assembly and Senate, and it was vetoed twice by Governor Schwarzenegger, unfortunately. More recently, we had Vermont pass legislation that would have implemented not exactly single payer, but a universal system that was largely publicly financed. And the governor basically caved and bailed on the project. It wasn't because it wasn't possible to do that in Vermont. It just became politically unfavorable for the governor to continue pushing it. And I wonder if people in the room are aware that in 2017, there's Section 1332 of the Affordable Care Act has waivers available for states, what they call state innovation waivers. And a lot of states have been looking at what this would allow them to do. And I think it's certainly a mixed bag. Those of us who are pushing for universal single-payer health care see this as a necessary component of moving forward. The waivers would only apply to what's in the Affordable Care Act. So that's mostly what the health insurance subsidies, the money that's currently subsidizing the purchase of private insurance, that's what they relate to. The ACA stipulates that waivers will only be provided to states that can cover as many people, that provide the same level of benefits in terms of the health insurance that's available through the Affordable Care Act, and that it can't cost more in total health care dollars. So some of us see that as, okay, for whatever the Affordable Care Act did in terms of expanding insurance, it's provided a floor, so states won't be able to roll backwards. But we've seen states apply for waivers, like in California, under Section 1332, the governor applied for a waiver to cover undocumented people in healthcare, in health insurance plans in the state, which is huge and great, and it looks like they're going to be covering children in their Medi-Cal. And then we have states like Arizona that are applying for waivers to, you know, privatize their Medicaid program. So we're going to have to keep a close eye on how that unfolds in 2017. And I think for people in the room, being connected to groups like Physicians for a National Health Program, Labor Campaign for Single Payer, Healthcare Now, and continuing to push for the right to healthcare, being vocal about how this system affects you in terms of your own ability to get care, to provide care as health professionals, to make sure that people in their communities are staying healthy in the face of a market-based healthcare system. You know, it's on us to raise our voices and make sure that we're doing everything we can to organize on the ground and push for these reforms. So in the interest of time, I skipped my presentation and my PowerPoint presentation and summarized, you know, what we did, because I think we want to have some time for dialogue with folks from the audience. And I have to catch a plane and have to leave shortly after 4. So I'm going to hand it over to Martha. Sound good?
That's terrifying.
All right. Thanks, everyone.
And here I thought that was your presentation. I didn't realize you had slides you weren't showing. I would have insisted. But I do appreciate what you're saying, Katie, and that is, seriously, folks in the room, conversation, discussion, questions, complaints, go. Yes. And can people say who they are?
So I've done advocacy with the National Multiple Sclerosis Society for about 25 years, and I'm wondering, every time I talk about healthcare reform with different groups, I rarely hear talk about long-term care, and it always seems like an afterthought. It's never really discussed within the framework of healthcare, and I'm wondering how the lens can be changed, because it's such an important audience. That audience is everyone, and the people that have a vested interest in that are people that really want to fight for reform.
In my longer PowerPoint presentation that I do on this, I always discuss long-term care because, frankly, we're all underinsured when it comes to long-term care. I get to speak with students and, you know, I want to make sure that they know the only plan that covers it really is Medicaid. right? So the idea that we have to become poorer before being able to access that service is ridiculous. In the bills that we support, long-term care is covered. Interestingly, in the state bill, it's because it's so complicated, the language actually says that if it were passed tomorrow, in my wildest dreams, that it would need a 2-year plan to figure out how to provide long-term care appropriately to the residents of New York State. And I thought that was particularly, you know, troubling, but also interesting because it raises this question of what does a real long-term care system look like for people? And are there international examples or legislation that you could point us to really help firm up that process of in our advocacy? I think that's an area that, because it's so complicated, people a lot of times, I think, don't go into the details of.
Every state is supposed to have an Olmstead plan. Mm-hmm. I don't know how up to date they're keeping them, but from the Supreme Court decision that said that everyone is entitled to care of the least restrictive
environment.
Type.
Mm-hmm.
They're entitled to it, but there's no money put for.
Mm-hmm. Right, if it's not funded, it's like not real.
It's not financed.
Mm-hmm.
There was nothing to back that up. So it's in word only.
Mm-hmm.
So the whole system is built around the existing framework, which is you spend down until you're in Medicaid, and then they put you in a nursing home. Unless you're lucky enough to maybe find a waiver program that might pay for a small amount of in-home services until you can't be in your home.
Mm-hmm. And to be clear, as part of our framework, that health care is a right, long-term care is absolutely included in that, and I think it's really important to raise that, too.
Yep.
Looks like.
Okay.
That gentleman in the back, would that by any chance be you, Andy?
Yeah.
And who are you? What Andy's really pointing to is the fact that financing healthcare is not the same thing as really figuring out how to deliver a just healthcare to people in the United States. A lot of us really get that. Some folks don't really get that. What we do get is that single payer is a first step that somewhat levels the playing field so that we can then really begin to fight for true healthcare justice, which happens in who delivers what kind of care and stuff like that. Other comments or questions? Linnea, and who are you?
History again. Remember,
saying that you need to cover doctor care. This isn't enough just to cover hospital care. You need to cover doctor care. And they had already had a proposal put forward by Jerry Ford called Better Care, which was going to be this private insurance that would be paid for. But when it came through, that idea came through the committees, the Democratic committees that were controlling Congress, you ended up with something where Part B was the federal contribution, but you had to have your additional portion. And the insurance companies played a role in this because they argued that if you gave comprehensive coverage to seniors, that they would overuse the system. The typical sort of thing, oh, you know, we can't give people complete coverage. They go back to skin in the game. I love that expression, you know. We know who's getting skinned and it ain't no game. But coming back to this issue, the insurance company said, well, right now the typical benefit package is an 80-20 package. And so we want this Medicare to be an 80-20 package because otherwise seniors will use too much care, right? As soon as it got passed, they began selling private policies to fill the 20%. So they were just willing to take whatever piece of the pie that they could, which was the 20% that would be left over, rather than having a comprehensive system of coverage for physician care. So the insurers and the AMA are the reason why we have kind of the holes that currently exist in Medicare.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's why we need to not only expand Medicare, but to actually get rid of those and improve it. That's a serious question.
Other comments? Yes. And you are? Insurance information. Well, the accident happened just across the Ohio line in Michigan.
It's a no-fault state. It was my car sitting in the garage. It was my car insurance that had to pay the bill. I had to find somebody who I happen to know is working in the insurance industry to clue me in on why nobody was paying my bills. You know, and I got three different insurances. No, I had four. I just didn't know I had a fourth one. That's how crazy stupid the American healthcare system is. You know, one system that covers everybody, guaranteed, cradle to grave. We can do it. Improve and expand Medicare at all.
Here, here.
We got a fight for it. This is going to be a fight. Nothing, you know. No progress without a demand. You know, so we have to demand it. And I would say you don't want to walk out of here if you're not, if you haven't joined an organization that's fighting for, you know, comprehensive universal health care for all Americans. Whether you're a physician, you should join PNHP if you will do that. You can join Healthcare for All. If you're anywhere in the country, you can join statewide movements. I've got one in Ohio, I've got one in Ohio. You heard about the New York Coalition. So you need to put up money. If you don't want to join, at least give money for the people that are willing to do the work. And we can all speak out.
And if you don't have money, you can still speak out.
Speak out, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You can join without giving money. Use right. your time, your effort. You can write letters to the editor. There are opportunities every day around the healthcare system, some travesty, tragedy, to point out that we could ameliorate it or improve it or eliminate the problem altogether with the system that covered everyone. And that we can do it because it's affordable. And the only barrier are the guys and gals who I listed up there who are making tens of millions of dollars a year. And so that's the final point maybe I'll make here. You know, you too can be an insurance executive. You have to answer this question, okay? Right now we're wasting somewhere around 15 to 20 cents on the dollar, at least maybe as much as 30 cents on the dollar in America on overheads and waste. You're an insurance company. You might get to keep 15 to 20% of the money. Do you want more money to be spent or less if you get to keep 15 to 20% of it? They have no interest in cost control, zero. They have no interest in improving our health. They're making more money when we're sick. You know, it's time for them to go, and we need to have them.
Here, here.
Last comment in the back, and you are?
The history of the state bill is that, you know, Gottfried had been introducing it with since like the 90s, and really in the early, when was it? It was probably like 2011-ish that we said, you know, the Affordable Care Act passed on the national level. This is a vehicle we can organize around on the state level, and we just did the work that grassroots activists do to make sure we were getting constituents into meetings with the assemblymen and the assembly people and the senators, very systematically doing that kind of lobbying and doing analysis on who are the power players in that district. So if we knew that we had folks who had endorsed the bill that had also been key folks in getting them elected or keeping them in office, we made sure to have them in the room. And so we've been lucky to expand our support from many union allies who are involved in electoral politics. So there are some folks, you walk in with some of the New York State Nurses Association members in red scrubs, and they know they better do whatever the nurses ask them to. And that plays out in different ways in different districts. And so we had a lot of luck with that. We would have annual lobby days that, you know, the one we did in 2011 had maybe 50 people, and then it doubled every year until this most recent one was over 300 people in Albany on one day. We also do specific medical and public health student lobby days. So we do a lot of, you know, the theatrical white coats in the halls, and that makes a really positive impression on the legislators when they hear people who are the future of medicine and public health speaking out for this. So those are tactics that have really, really worked for us. Really that formula of making sure that they're hearing from their constituents. If you go out to farmers markets or community events and have postcards that they can sign and then you deliver them to those legislators, those are, yeah, tried and true tactics that worked for us in New York State in terms of making it visible. And we should definitely talk more. You know how to find me if you ever want to talk more about organizing.
It's time for them to go. Let's make it happen. Thank you.